Hank, how are you today, man?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Doing well. We'll just jump right in because we've been having this discussion today with the Cardinals still searching for a quote-unquote offensive coordinator. How important is that position in your mind, just generally speaking, when you have an offensive-minded head coach who will be calling the plays? And I guess on the flip side of that, how attractive is an opening like that around the league when you don't have play-calling duties attached to that job description?
Well, I mean, obviously, I think as a coordinator, you'd much rather have the play-calling duties. Mm-hmm. You're still going to be one of those guys that's going to be in charge of game planning and putting things in installation of the game plan, helping put the game plan together. So, I mean, obviously, having being appointed or being empowered to be the coordinator, always one of those situations in the NFL, especially if you have some success as an offense. Because, I mean, let's face it, you have success as an offense. If you're a young coordinator, you're with a young coach, and that's what people covet right now. So, you know, from an attractiveness standpoint, I think that part's attractive. I think if you looked at the roster right now, that might make you take a step back a little bit and go, man, I hope I get another opportunity instead of just this one opportunity. But there's only 32 offensive coordinators in the National Football League. So if you get that opportunity, you have nowhere else to go. Obviously, you're going to take it.
All right, Mark, I want to ask you about this, because now that the Cardinals have sort of revamped their coaching staff, we're hearing this great excitement for all these assistants they've hired, just like we did under Steve Wilks, and it all gets down to the players, and we know that. But as offensive coach, offensive line coach, what do you know, what do you think you know about Sean Coogler?
Sean, you know, came into Denver. I don't know a ton. I mean, I know Sean, I've talked to Sean. No nonsense guy. I think they were pretty happy with some of the development and some of the growth potential. I mean, a lot of problems in Denver, the same problems you dealt with in Arizona, with a lack of efficiency with the offensive line, a lack of just flat out lack of talent. And I think he got a lot out of the talent that he was given. They weren't great up front, but they made strides. They played better as the season went on. And I think they did a pretty good job considering the fact that, like I said, I think they were challenged athletically. So that's what I know about Sean Coogler. Yeah. You know, not a ton, but I think here in Denver, he took pretty average at best talent, maybe below average talent, and actually got them to play pretty decent football. Not great, but decent football. Decent. At least give them a chance to compete in the running game.
Well, it seems like the Cardinals are hell-bent on hiring a lot of ex-Broncos coaches. I don't know if you endorse that strategy or not, Mark.
Well, listen, obviously, the thing about coaching, especially that position, and I think it's more and more, you know, it's so interesting to watch the last collective bargaining agreement and to watch you negotiate practice time, you know, out of that. And I could go on for an hour about all the mistakes made in the last collective bargaining agreement. But the bottom line is this: to me, it's about player development, and it's about teaching nuance with limited practice time. You know, it's one thing for a guy to tell you, hey, you got to stay low. It's another thing for a guy to be able to show you, to be able to diagram it, to be able to talk about, you know, the footwork and the hand placement and the bend that you have to have and striking guys from a low to high plane to create leverage. That's a whole different thing. And just to be able to say, hey, man, you got to block this guy, it's one thing to tell you how to block him, another thing to show you how. And that's what I think a lot of times that's what's missing in the NFL. Just because you coach in the NFL doesn't mean you know anything. Doesn't mean you're any good at it. There's plenty of horrible coaches in the National Football League that have survived for a long time.
Yes.
So you've witnessed it. So, I mean, it just is, it's the nature of the beast. It really, to me, is about teaching and developing guys. And there's a reason, you know, every year, what is this, 8 straight years of the Patriots have been in the AFC Championship game.
Yeah.
And it's not just because of Tom Brady. It's a big reason, yes. But they have guys that they develop over the course of time that you don't know who their names are. And all of a sudden you're like, damn, that guy's a pretty good player. That guy's a pretty good player, and it's about the development. Their coach is developing those players and making them good NFL players.
Mark Schlereth, our weekly NFL guest here on Bickley and Murata. And we'll move off the coaching thing and get to the playoffs and what's going on around the league. But last thing, since we last spoke, we had our discussion about Cliff Kingsbury last week. In that time, obviously, the Cardinals have hired Vance Joseph, a guy that we've had many discussions about with you during the course of this season. Didn't work out as a head coach. What are your thoughts on Vance Joseph as a defensive mind and in this coordinator spot for the Cardinals?
Well, you know, I think it probably fits right now at this point in his career. I think it just fits better. And I think, you know, I always say this about hiring a head coach. Even if the guy isn't the greatest X's and O's guy or whatever, I think the one thing you have to be able to do is command your audience, whether it's one-on-one with a player, whether it's the entire team meeting, whether it's your coach, one coach, or your entire coaching staff or the media. When you can command the audience, you have a certain you build a certain rapport with those people, but you also have a certain, you know, gravitas, if you will, when you actually speak to people, your ability to communicate, to get your message across. You know, as an assistant coach, you don't have to have that. What you have to do is be able to connect with your players. And I think Vance has that. I mean, anybody you talk to that Vance coached, they've loved Vance. They've loved playing for him. They loved his ability to communicate with them on a football field. I just don't think it necessarily resonated as a head coach very well. And, you know, and I think you learn your mistakes along the way. But, and, you know, the next opportunity, if you get another opportunity, you'll probably be way better off for it. But from what I understand and from the guys that I know that have played for Vance, they really enjoy Vance and they'll play hard for Vance. And, yeah. You know, I think sometimes, I mean, I played for Norv Turner as a head coach. He's been a tremendous offensive coordinator throughout his career, but as a head coach, his first go around, it was a struggle for him. And,
yep.
And there's just a different dynamic there.
Dave Wannstedt was the same way. There's a lot of guys like that who fit that mold. All right, I'm curious, what are your reactions? And we've talked a lot about Cliff Kingsbury and where the league is going, the copycat league. The Cardinals now are allegedly trying to build a playbook that incorporates all of Cliff Kingsbury's innovation with traditional NFL running game stuff. Can those two mix? And if so, why hasn't it happened, or why haven't some team tried to do that before?
Well, I think they all try to do it. You know, they all come in with the whole innovation game. And I mean, here's the thing, guys. I talked to two general managers just last week. End of last week. Talked to two general managers about this topic in general, just about how innovation happens. And I can take my iPad and I have through an NFL team, I have what the NFL coaches and the NFL organizations use. Mm-hmm. And so I can take, you could say, okay, Stink, give me every 3-by-1 formation out of 3-wide personnel that happened in week 15. And I can plug that into my iPad and I'll collate all that information in 30 seconds. And I'll have every team's 11 personnel, 3-by-1 formations, and each defense, how they defended it. Mm-hmm. I can do it in 30 seconds. So what used to take you 3 days to put together, you can collate that in 30 seconds. So you tell me how much innovation you think is going on in the National Football League when everybody has access to that and everybody steals everybody's play.
Great point.
Yeah, honestly, how much innovation goes on? Everybody runs the same crap. I do games. I spend 50 hours a week prepping games. There's not one team that doesn't get a 3-by-1 formation out of 3-wide personnel and run an all-go special. Everybody runs it. 100% of the league runs all-go special out of that personnel grouping and that formation. Uh-huh. So you tell me how much innovation. Where it really comes down to is how well does my running game sync up with my play-action stuff and how many deceptives can I get out of that? The teams that are really good, their running game matches identically to their play-action game. And what you see is you see a lot of teams who run play-action stuff, but it looks nothing like their running game. So from an innovation standpoint, it's really, can I match up an NFL running game, and does my play-action stuff mesh with my running game? And that's really where innovation comes through. I mean, the innovation stuff is, okay, if we run this route, how do we adjust based on their personnel, who can we attack? And then the other thing is, if I see it in-game, and I think this is the big difference, the coaches who see it in-game, they can see and go, okay, this is how they're playing us. They're in a too-high safety look. But on the out route, if we run a flat sail combination, that safety tries to undercut the sail. So can we run sail and go? And do we adjust that? We get in the same formation, we get the same look, and then we, bam, we hit them with a little bit different route combination. Mm-hmm. There's innovation for you. But it's not like all of a sudden you're coming up with a new play that nobody has ever seen before, and you're like, oh, my God, the guy's a genius. Genius and football are mutually exclusive events. Come on, let's drop the big... You got think about this now. From the time I was 15, I gorged myself till I was 300 pounds, right? I mean, I used to wake up at night and eat ice cream and candy bars, right, so I could be heavy enough to play. And then I put a real thin piece of plastic on my head and smash it into other people. It's not genius, guys. It's stupidity. You're not coaching in the NFL. You're not playing in the NFL if you're a freaking genius. It just they're mutually exclusive events, so let's quit trying to make it more complicated than it really is.
Mark Schlereth, our weekly NFL guest, NFL on Fox 104.3, The Fan in Denver. Shifting to the playoffs, my biggest takeaway from the first weekend, the wild card weekend, Mark, was what the Chargers defense was able to do to shut down Lamar Jackson and Baltimore. Very impressive. My biggest takeaway from weekend two of the playoffs was what Josh McDaniels and the Patriots offense did to that very same Chargers defense. I mean, when you can shift like that and kind of shape shift from week to week, I mean, I know people want to throw dirt on the Patriots coffin, but they're really scary because they can do that better than anybody, in my opinion. Do you agree?
Oh, yeah, I do. I mean, obviously, Tom Brady is Tom Brady for a reason. What is it, 8 straight AFC championship games he's played in now? I mean, that's borderline ridiculous, but you give him the answers to the test. You know, if you think, you know, you're the Chargers and you're Gus Bradley and, hey, we're really good because we've got great personnel. We just do what we do. Good luck, right? We're going to play – like, I look back, and this was my key to the game last week. I was like, you know, when you look at the Patriots versus the Chargers in 2017, it was a 21-13 victory. The Patriots, I believe, went to Carson, California – to take on the Chargers, and their running backs had 14 receptions for like 168 yards. And when you play a base cover three, because that's what they base out of, here's what ends up happening to you in that cover three. If I run both my corners off, right, that becomes a man-to-man matchup. So if I run two wide receivers on goes, that's a man-to-man matchup. They have to run with that, all right? So that zone becomes a matchup man. It's a matchup zone concept, right? So I run them in that deep third. Those corners have to go and cover that. That's their responsibility. Now all of a sudden, the outside linebacker and whoever's the buzz safety, the guy that walks up, right, the in-the-box safety, those two guys' responsibility is curl the flat. So they have to get 12 yards of depth in the curl, and now all of a sudden I throw the flat to the running back. They've got to rally up and make that tackle. Now, if they're great, they can rally up, make that tackle for 2 yards. You're in second down and 8, and you're behind the chains. But if they don't rally up quick enough or they miss a tackle, that's, you know, second down and 2, second down and 1 that I'm in. James White had 15 catches in that game. So if you think you're going to line up and say, hey, we've got good enough athletes and we're just going to play what we play against Tom Brady, then, you know, again, that there's the genius and football mutually exclusive events. Like, do that, you're going to get eviscerated. And, you know, they're going to play zone. That's what they do. And you know, they paid the ultimate price because they just got their ass kicked playing that way. So with Tom Brady, you got to take your chances. You've got to constantly change it up. Eric Mangini, when he went to the Jets and he went to Cleveland to play Tom Brady, he won a couple of those games, and they had a first-half game plan and a second-half defensive game plan. And it completely changed everything. They changed the looks. They changed the fronts. They changed the coverages. And then they came in at halftime and scrap-piled what they did in the first half and had success with and came out with a completely different defense in the second half. And that's how they attacked Tom Brady. So he is, you know, he's played that long. Like he says, I have the answers to the test. So
yeah. Yep.
You better do something to try to at least slow him down.
All right, last question. I'm sure you've seen the weather forecast for Kansas City. Brutal Arctic cold, and you're going to get guys saying the right thing. Bill Belichick's all right. We don't care. We'll play anywhere. Guys will be wearing, you know, bare arms on the field to show their toughness. What is the reality of a football player playing in extreme cold like that? And how many guys are just thinking about getting on that bus and just getting someplace warm?
Well, you know, I mean, I think that, one, it's cold. It's cold for everybody. You realize that. When you're playing, when you're in the game, once you start playing, it's a football game. Like, you stay pretty warm. You know, you roll the sideline, you put a coat on, and you sit on that heated bench, and you put your helmet on top of the little heated, you know, they got the little heaters things. You guys don't have them in Arizona, but they have these little heater things, and they're great because they warm your helmet up. It's like putting on, it's like slipping a warm biscuit over your head. You know, you take the biscuit out of the oven and it's all hot and you put a little butter on it and it melts all over the place. And you're like, this is the best biscuit I've ever eaten. And it's the greatest thing in the world. That's what your helmet hanging on that thing is like. It's like a warm biscuit over your head.
That's
and
awesome.
It feels so good when you put it on. Yeah. And so anyhow, you stay warm. Now I would hate to be a backup player in those conditions. Cause they just must be miserable. Those son of a guns got to be miserable in those conditions. It's cold. It's nasty. I actually was playing in Green Bay in a game like that once, and I broke my helmet. And so my helmet is like broke. I can't buckle the chin. I broke it. I broke the face mask. It's kind of dangling.
Uh-huh.
So without missing a play, I take my helmet off. I chuck it to the sideline, and one of the backup players throws me his helmet. Well, I don't have a real big head. I kind of have a peanut head. Like, I have a certain head to body weight ratio that,
yeah.
Like, there's a certain – when you get to a weight – like, there's a certain – if you lose too much weight, your head looks way too big.
Yep.
Like, I gained a lot of weight. I was so big, my head looked like this little tiny peanut on top of my shoulders. Well, he throws me his helmet. First off, it's like a bobblehead helmet, right? And the thing is frozen solid. I mean, it is like putting an ice cube, not a warm muffin. It's an ice cube on top of my head. And so I had to, you know, they're fixing my helmet. I had to wear it for, like, two plays. And I, like, didn't want to bust a grape. I didn't want to hit anybody. Like,
oh.
I was like –
yeah.
Please call a play where I can run out and not touch anybody. miserable. So it's playing in the cold is miserable, but you just have to deal with it. Everybody has to play in that.
Mark, always appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks, man. We'll do it again next week.
Anytime.
All right. Mark Schlereth, NFL at Fox 104.3, The Fan in Denver.